Thank you so much for joining us. Day 5 at Royal Ascot, and it's the From the Horse's Mouth podcast. My name is Patrick Connelly, and I'm joined for the 5th and final day by Rory De Largy and Ruby Walsh, who have been firing in winners of plenty throughout the week. Some really nice winners from the lads, and I'll recap on some of those. Before I do, speaking of recaps, a quick shout out that we've got the Rewind and Quiz shows available to be watched on the Paddy Power YouTube page. All you have to do is check the show notes on this very show. We've got a very easy to use link and you can watch those. You've got Royal Ascot content aplenty. Really good fun on those, particularly with Joseph O'Brien, who of course is got his first Royal Ascot winner as a trainer now. Also, the Irish Derby next weekend, and we are going to sponsor the Rockingham. Yes, free tickets. If you would like a pair of tickets, we're going to give them to you. All you got to do is quote a tweet around this show. So quote a tweet regarding this particular show. Use the hashtag FTHM, and you're simply in the hat. Obviously, if you say something nice, you'll probably go into the hat quicker than if you say something not very nice, which I'm sure you wouldn't anyway. So we'll be contacting you via Twitter if you do manage to get those tickets. So that's the Rockingham, the Sunday on Irish Derby Festival. Okay, Rory, Ruby, well done this week. We're having a cracker of a week. Highlight of the week for you so far, Rory, personally, and also on the track in terms of as a racing fan?
I'll throw it slightly under the radar here. Obviously, Saffron Beach won really well. But Jane Chappell-Hyams Ascot is finished already. She's got no entries on Friday or Saturday. Sent three horses to the meeting, two winners and a second at 40-1 in a big field handicap. So you can't really say fairer than that. She's had an absolutely cracking week. And it's good to see, you know, one of the smaller Newmarket yards really thriving there. And Saffron Beach, I know one or two of her rivals didn't run to form, but she was no fillies ever carried a Group 1 penalty successfully in that race. And she blew them away. So she's really excited to look forward to for the rest of the season and all the top Group 1 races for fillies and mares over a mile.
Cannot stop the Australians, horses or females at the moment. Of course, Jane Chappell-Hyams, very much an Aussie, but based in Newmarket. Ruby, we're recording before the racing on the Friday. This is the heatwave day. But before that, what was your highlight so far this week?
Probably Shane Cross's ride on State of Rest would be the one for me. A tactical race, and he just got it absolutely spot on. Big day for him. Was unlucky on him in the Tattersalls Gold Cup. Theoretically, on that occasion, he did the right thing. Set out to follow Alan Kerr and Lord North, but Alan Kerr and Lord North set too far off high definition in front. They just about got to him at the Curra. Shane Cross didn't get there. So he set out with the right... How he went about riding the horse was the right theory to ride it. Didn't work out for him. And he got it spot on here in the Prince of Wales and paid back connections for missing out at the Curra. I thought it was a great ride from the front and definitely a highlight for me.
Would you expect the result to be the same if they met in similar ground, let's say in an eclipse or something along those lines, Baybridge and State of Rest it is?
I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if it turned around. That was a very tactical race and, you know, sometimes jockeys win races, and I thought Shane Cross definitely won that race.
Yeah, it was brilliant to see. What a horse he's been, State of Rest. So a couple of highlights there in Jane Chappell-Hyams and State of Rest. Well, Shane Cross, I should say, for Ruby and Rory. Okay, let's look ahead to the final day. We got some interesting short ones. We got, obviously, typically difficult handicaps as well. We're going to start with the Chesham. This race is kind of been dominated by Alfred Munnings for some time since he's seen a winning debut at Leopards. Ryan Moore, Aidan O'Brien, he's at the time recording even money. He was odds on. He's even money at the moment. 8-1 then for Frankie Dettori and Jonathan Gosden's Al Zaheer. A week to forget for Frankie. As I said, we're recording before racing on the Friday. He may well have had a couple of winners by then. Crypto Force, who costs more than it costs the Bitcoin, a few Bitcoin, and the London sale on the Monday. 8-1 for Michael O'Callaghan. Faisal Road is 9-1 and has double figure odds the rest, including the well-backed each way horse Dark 30. Okay, Rory, straight to you for the Chesham. This race is a kind of a curious one, just for those who are maybe once a year listeners or maybe this is actually, you can only enter this race or be entered depending on your breeding. Isn't that right?
Yeah, the sire and dam have got to have won it at a mile and a quarter or further. I think a mile, 1.5 furlongs counts in that regard. Robbie's rounding up and nice. Down here. But yeah, it's sire restricted and indeed, or dam restricted. So you've got horses who should be middle distance horses next year. It's quite an interesting race for that. And it's nice to see that kind of race in the programme as well, so that these staying types aren't forced to race against sprinters in their first season and get shown up. So the Chesham's always a really interesting contest, and it's become much stronger maybe in the last decade, particularly as Aidan's really used it as a key focus for some of his top class horses. Whereas, you know, maybe 20 years ago, the Chesham was a bit of a nothing race. It was a, it was the weakest of the two-year-old races at the meeting, and that's definitely not the case now.
Okay, right. That's interesting. And I think they opened it up to the dams, didn't they? It was previously just
it was just
sire.
It was just yeah. sire, yeah. Yeah,
yeah just, right. That's our breeding chat done. Give us the winner, Rory, of this year's Chesham.
Well, I'm not sure I've got the winner here, but I think the value has to be Crypto Force, doesn't it? Double-figure price. Alfred Monnings was very impressive beating Sagomu 4.5 lengths on his debut. Well, Crypto Force beat Sagomu 9 lengths on his debut. So why is one odds on and the other 10 to 1? That's what I want to know. And that's just, it's as simple as that, really. Listen, Alfred Monnings looked very good. He's well-balanced. He's well put together. He looked very professional. Crypto Force looked a little greener when he won, but I like the way he did it. You know, Alfred Monnings always handy on his debut. Crypto Force has come from further back than ideal at the Curragh to win that race, and he looks like a horse with a lot of potential. So although Alfred Monnings could well be the real deal, and clearly when Aidan has a horse for this race and he knows he's got a horse for the race, you must respect it. But on what they've achieved on the race course so far, Crypto Force has to be an each way play, given that he ties in with Alfred Monnings' form anyway. It's always slightly dubious taking form from one horse, and Sagomu probably went backwards from his debut, given he's quite fancy the Curragh, made the running, dropped out late on. Maybe he's you know, run a stone below form. Always very difficult to tell early in a horse's career what kind of level they're running to, unless you've got the clock to back you up, which none of these really have. It doesn't tend to be the case with 7 furlong horses that they're breaking the clock on their debut. So you're guessing an awful lot, and you're working out who's going to progress from first or second, or from the first or second start to this race. But I see no reason why Crypto Force won't progress a fair degree as well. And while I wouldn't want to be a bookmaker on course laying Alfred Monnings, it's a lot easier backing each way because you've still got a reasonable return if your horse finishes second or third.
Well, speaking of that, it's a nice money back race, actually. Money back second, third or fourth online, and also money back race in retail. Crypto Force, 900 grand, I think they bought him for on Monday night. Ruby Walsh, is that the angle to go with?
I can see exactly where Rory's coming from, and I was the same to go against Alfred Monnings, but I thought Auguste Rodin, that was second to Crypto Force, the Curragh, was very unlucky. And to me, Crypto Force is a winner, but really shouldn't be a winner. So that kind of was putting me off him a little bit. So I ended up with, I didn't realise at the time, he was the each-way steamer, and that's Dark 30. And that's purely on form. I mean, the two horses that were behind him at Newbury, Mysterious Knight and Marban, have both gone and won since. Mysterious Knight at Newbury, Marban at Nottingham. I just thought he was strong form each way against a favourite that's plenty short, in my opinion.
Fair enough. Two each-way picks in Crypto Force and Dark 30 both have come in for significant each-way support. We move on to the Jersey, this race for the probably not fast enough sprinters and probably not staying well enough milers. It's the 7 furlong intermediate trips. 7-2, Noble Truth, the favourite for Charlie Appy, William Buick having a good week. 6-1, Alfela for Owen Burrows. 6-1, Drifting from 4. 6-1, Samburu, unbeaten, comes in off a handicap win for Frankie Dettori and Jonathan Eddie Gosden. Then you've got Henry de Bromhead, who's got Star Girls Al Mal, who was far from disgraced in the Irish 1000 Guineas. She steps back in trip at 13-2. Manada then at 7-1 and 10-1 and bigger the rest. All right, Ruby, I'll go back to you for the Jersey. We're going to go 4 places in this race. It's got a very open look to it.
Very open look, and plenty of horses you can make cases for. And I came down and won Bin Soror's. Strange to see the Shadwell colours inside Bin Soror's yard, but this fella is one at Newcastle and Kempton on the all weather, albeit slightly different surfaces. But I thought Munada under Jim Crowley for Saeed Bin Soror would be my choice.
He's 7-1 at the moment, Munada. Well, if Sheikh Mohammed's not giving him any good horses anymore, he may as well go to Shadwell, Saeed Bin Soror. Rory, your thoughts on the Jersey?
Yeah, I didn't absolutely love the Jersey. I thought the fillies had a reasonable chance in it. I thought Stargirls Al Mal was a bit unlucky in the Irish Guineas. I thought she would cope well with the drop back to 7 furlongs, so she had a chance. And I'm inclined towards Hello You, who's been rather forgotten about. Now, the only issue with Hello You is she's got a penalty to carry, which is not ideal in a race like this. But you can write off her Guineas run. She doesn't stay a mile. I know she wasn't beaten that far in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies over a mile, but that's a very sharp mile at Del Mar. What she will really like is getting back on quick ground, back at 7 furlongs. She's beaten 4 lengths in the Nell Gwynn, but she was giving weight away. Again, she had that penalty to carry from last season, giving weight away to Cachet. She also looked much more in need of the run than Cache did that day. And I didn't greatly fancy her for the Guineas, but I thought she was one who would go on and do something useful later in the season. She looks disappointing on the back of that effort, but she was far too keen and she just simply didn't get home. So I'd write the Guineas off. And I think she is the type to win a good pot this year. The problem, of course, is that she's ended up giving weight away to some very useful calls, which is never easy for a filly to do. I think she drifts in the betting as well because of that. And I think if you're getting, I think, what are you getting now, about 16s
as we speak, yeah.
I'd only really want to get involved at bigger than 20s, but I'm pretty sure she'll go that way because her profile is not a particularly attractive one. But I think people will focus too much on the Guineas. Or even the fact she's beaten four lengths in the Nell Gwynn and think she hasn't trained on. I think she's trained on fine. And I think she'll be thereabouts. My gut feeling is the penalty probably stops her winning, but I can see her hitting the frame at a biggish price.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on Hello You then. If not even in the jersey, then definitely one to keep an eye on throughout the season. Right, move on to the Hardwick, the 340. This race, by the way, pop into a shop and it's going to be our final money back or loser race for retail customers. That's simple. Money back as a free bet. Simple as that. Now, Hurricane Lane, a very progressive animal, Irish Derby winner and a St. Ledger winner, 4-6 favourite for this on his seasonal debut. 11-2 Broom, who's danced just about every dance on all sides of the planet, 11-2. Solid Stone for Sir Michael Stout, who's got such a wonderful record in this race, is 8-1 Third Realm, Mostadaf 10s, Lafayette for Noel Mead and Colin Keane is 12-1. It's 33's bar. I will go back to you, Rory, for the Hardwick. Hurricane Lane, 4-6, he's definitely the one to beat. If he is the horse he was last year on debut this season, he wins. That's my take on it.
Yes, but unfortunately, there are a couple of ifs in there, which make him unattractive at 4-6. We haven't seen him this season. This would not have been his intended starting point for the season either. And you don't know how well a horse trains on from 3-4 until you see them. Now, everything about him physically suggests he really should, but you don't know until you see them. And a lot of horses who've promised to train on well from 3-4 have been disappointing. So I don't like to back a horse at the kind of price he is without having an idea of how they've developed. And the biggest worry for me is if the ground is still very fast on Saturday. They're going to put water on again after today. There was a suggestion, because we had this week of really hot weather, you might have thunderstorms around. And I know parts of the country will have rain tomorrow, but the suggestion is that Ascot won't get any of that, although it may be overcast. Therefore, it might not as quickly as it will today. But he's never raced in anything quicker than good. And he is, you know, he's quite a heavy topped horse. And I'd be a little bit worried about him on very quick ground. Again, not saying that it'll definitely stop him, but at 4-6, you don't want any question marks. And you've got a couple of question marks for Hurricane Lane there. If you were going to back him, you should back him to win by a margin if he's going to overcome those things. And you might get a slightly better price for that. But I can't be with him. My struggle is I can't see anything really, really strong against him. Broom will automatically shorten up if there is opposition to Hurricane Lane. And he'll probably shorten up a little bit more than he should. He's been a little bit in and out, but of course he's been racing internationally. He's got form of very quick ground, which not many in this field do. But I think, as I said, because he's second favourite, people will automatically look to him, and he will be a short enough price in the end. I'm inclined to take a flyer here and go with Away He Goes at a massive price.
Wow.
Didn't win last season, but ran a lot of very good races. He was due to run in the Melbourne Cup, but he picked up an injury before the race and was ruled out. Now, that's a concern, because you want to see how he's got over that. And he's got the same question marks as Hurricane Lane. I'm not going to deny that. He's coming back from an injury. We haven't seen him this season. The ground might be faster than ideal. So there are a few question marks there. But with him, you're getting an absolutely huge price. He doesn't have an awful lot to find. I mean, you know, he's got about £7 to find with Hurricane Lane. But in a race where nothing looks absolutely rock solid, I'm gonna cut my stakes right back, but just have a small swing at Away He Goes, because he's a horse with more talent than his form figures suggest, and he is capable of springing a surprise in a race like this. I'd be disappointed if there isn't a big race in him, and something like the Melbourne Cup does appeal for him down the line. That's the kind of race that he would do well in. But you know, in a race like the Hardwick, we've seen a few shocks in this over the years as well. I can see him outrunning his odds and surprising a few people.
And we've dead eight at the moment. So you're going each. This is the filthiest of filthy each way bets on the
it's not particularly filthy, it's really. It's that kind of race.
It's grubby.
Broom is a filthy each way bet. But okay. You know, away he goes is a little less grubby than that.
Fair enough. Okay, away he goes. He's 50-1 at the time recording. Hopefully all eight stand. Ruby, your thoughts on the Hardwick?
Again, I was agreeing with Rory. He's looking for something to take on Hurricane. And I think if he's the horse he was last year, like you said, PK, he will win. But I was going to go and give Moss Tadaf a chance. I know he was well beaten by Baybridge at Sandown on his last start, but he still had Adi behind him. It's sort of 10-1. He'd have a chance. I'm hoping for a good day for Jim Crowley.
Yeah, clearly. And a good Thursday as well for Jim Crowley. Or Friday, I should say, because you're quite keen on Ehraz, aren't you? Well, he may well have won by the time we listen to this. Let's move on to the 420. It's the Platy Jubes, the Platinum Jubilee, and Home Affairs for the Australians. Chris Waller, who I guess could have run both of his sprinters, but he's relying on Home Affairs, which is good news for James McDonald. I say good news for James McDonald because he would have had to have got off Nature Strip onto Home Affairs, which would have been tricky for him. 15-8 favourite, the Coolmore horse, and one of the top sprinters down in Australia. 6-1 Campanelli, who of course we've seen a couple of times here at Royal Ascot, and famously won in the Stewards' Room last year. Irad Ortiz Jr. takes over. Not a great week for him. 7-1 Creative Force. You've got Ireland's best sprinter in a long time in a case of you. Dual Group 1 winner for Ada McGuinness, 11-1. Sacred is 11-1. 12-1 for the other Australian. That's Artorias. Jamie Spencer's booked for that one. And 12-1 and bigger the rest. It is a lovely international feel to this, Ruby. And we've already seen them do well. The Aussies, they've taken the first big sprint and they're going to take the second.
Oh, they well could, PK, but it's just such a big field. How do you face into one at such a sharp price? And I think with Home Affairs, like he's less than 2-1, 15-8, 27 runners, 17, as we saw on the straight track so far this week. 17 is about as high as you want to be. I know the winner, Danny Tudhope, rode for the filly that won the Queen Mary, came from 17, but not many higher have won. So, it's a high enough draw, a lot of pace in the race. I think they're going to go really hard. And I think that might suit Creative Force. I think he'd be coming on. He's drawn him one, really on the far side. There's been a couple of winners out of two already this week. Maybe one will come good, but I'd be happier to be over that side on a horse that probably wants all of 6 furlongs. But I think he'll be finishing, he'll be coming home and he'll do me.
Creative Force for Ruby. All right, Rory, your thoughts on the Platy Jubes?
Yeah, I think we need to dig into the draw. When we discussed this earlier in the week, and I thought the most significant thing draw wise was in the when we had a 30 odd runner race in the Britannia yesterday. The jockeys didn't want to be anywhere near the stands rail. The one chance they had of actually racing there, when you get fields of like 20 or less, they're racing up the center of the track. You've got to move to the rail to get that position. When there's 30 of them, you can get to the rail pretty easily. But the jockeys were all, they were, you know, coming out of the stalls and immediately trying to get to the centre of the track. The interesting thing today with the going description at Ascot, and obviously that might change for tomorrow, for the first time all week, the far side of the track is officially faster than the near side. Now, all week, the near side has officially been a little bit faster on the going stick readings, but the jockeys haven't been keen to go there. On Friday, the going stick readings suggested that the far side is actually faster. That suggests to me that we always are doing this before racing on Friday. The jockeys will actually want to go middle to far side rather than up the middle as they have done through the week. And that probably makes it harder for the horses drawn high. Unfortunately, that's not paid for me this week because I've been looking for the high horses to do well. But it's clear if the jockeys won't go there, there's no point in sticking with them. And Jimmy Spencer on Chief of Chiefs in the Buckingham Palace has gone from stall 25 to the far rail to be placed. And obviously we got the money out of that, but the fact that Jamie Spencer wants to get as far away from the near side as possible suggests that that's the way the jockeys will be thinking. And unless things change or we get a bit of rain or they decide to water more far side than near side, that's probably going to be the case again tomorrow. And for that reason, Creative Force is extremely high on my shortlist as well from stall one.
Right.
And that's probably going to be a good place to be. And the other horse I'd be interested in there is Highfield Princess, who's just improved enormously. Wasn't she running off 58 not that long ago?
Something very, very low, yeah.
It was a fair while ago, in fairness. And she was beaten off it as well, I think. She was very impressive at York. We know that she handles Ascot and stays further than six furlongs at Ascot as well from what she did last season. And she just keeps progressing. So she will probably be the one to catch on the far side. I wouldn't be at all surprised to see her win. She's a double figure price as well, but she'll also be helping set it up for Creative Force. And if I had to find something to hit the frame here, and there are 20, I mean, I wouldn't be at all surprised if you were going nine places in this race. It's almost, it's one of the hardest races to fathom of the week.
We're generous, Rory, but I mean,
you're generous enough.
I believe we'll be going six, which for a group one,
is almost unheard of, isn't it?
Non-handicap is not six places each way, but yeah, go on.
But a lot of the handicaps this week look easier than this. This is, you know, there aren't many no-hopers in here. And I mean, listen, a horse like Glenn Shiel is 50 to one. And that gives you an idea of the strength of this race when Glenn Shiel, who's run so well at Ascot before, not numerous times. So it's an absolute horror to try to find the winner. But if I had to find one that I think is likely to hit the frame, it would be Creative Force as well. So we'll have to put that down as an agreement between me and Ruby, it's, I guess.
I said it on Thursday. I can't remember what day, but I said it before. When you guys agree, you've done very well. You're both agreed on Magical Lagoon in the Ribblesdale, Moonista each way in the King Stand, Lusail each way in the St. James's Palace. Yeah, no, so that's good. That's good. You're agreeing. Love it. Right. That is the Creative Force, by the way, the one that they both picked in the Platinum Jubilee. I'll call it its proper name. Right. The 5 o'clock is the Woking. We're staying sprinting, folks. This time, though, it is a handicap and an interestingly short. I must say, I was surprised when I looked at the betting this morning to see Ken Condon's Quarantine Dreams 13-2 now. I think a winner of maybe one, only two races, but 13-2 and very, very strongly backed over the last 24 hours. Fresh for Daniel Tudhope, having the week of his life, is 7-1 in those Clipper Logistics colours. Black Rod for Michael Dodds is 8-1 and has been backed, as has Rohan. Ryan Moore booked, maybe that's the reason. That's 10s from 16s. And then you have 11-1 and 14s, and I can go on and on and on and on. Rory's probably going to give us part two of his draw analysis, Ruby. So before he does, I'll go back to you on unmute yourself, give us the winner of the Woking.
Well, Quarantine Dreams, looking at that this morning, led me straight to Warrior Brave. My brother-in-law's horse, drawn in stall 3, 25-1, ties in with the favourite. Now, Warrior Brave is a pound worse off with your favourite for their run, Quarantine Dreams, for their run behind Romantic Proposal, Geocentric and Muniesta at Nace over 5 furlongs in the Anglesey Lodge Woodland Stakes. I think Warrior Brave will get the trip. There's only a pound in the weight difference. To me, that is absolutely nothing. Warrior Brave, as I said, is in stall 3, which has to be a plus. He was 25-1. Your favourite, it was
13-2, yeah.
Where was it drawn?
He is drawn in stall two. Numero 2.
2, right beside him. So I just think with a pound between them, 13-2 shot or a 25-1 shot, know which one I'd like to be on.
Warrior Brave for Ruby. Right, Rory, the Wokingham. This is TriCast territory, this.
Well, I'm not sure. I'll no doubt give it a go. but it's, I need to see how other races pan out. As I said, I think there has to be a bias towards the far side of the track. It doesn't necessarily mean that you'll get all the low draws completely dominating. Horses can cross over. But the fact is that they probably will come over to a degree from the high draws. My problem here is that my shortlisted horses, when I looked at this in the first place, were drawn high, and they're not shortlisted because they're drawn high. I thought they were interesting horses. So I'll give them anyway and hope things pan out. I would have been keen on Rohan, but he's been heavily backed. He was a 20-1 shot early in the week, and he's been backed at half that price. I've kind of missed the boat with him, but he loves the track. And although he's been unplaced in his last 4 starts, he's been racing in group company and not having races run to suit. This is the ideal kind of race for Rohan. So I can see him bouncing right back to form. But I thought an old friend in Summerhands would go really well here. Stall 27 is a little bit of potentially a bit of kicking teeth. Things could swing around again. Could end up being a great race. He's again, he's got lots of duck eggs next to him, but he bounced back to form at York last time out without his usual visor. His record when he's got headgear applied for the first time or reapplied is 2 wins from 2 runs. So the first time he wore cheek pieces, he won. And the first time he wore a visor, he won the Stewards' Cup. Or might have been the other way around. But yeah, he's got a very good record when the headgear goes on. Raced without it last time out and ran better than expected. And he looks like he's ready to come back to form. He's off the same mark, I think, as when he was second in this race a couple of years ago. He retains all his ability at the age of eight. He just hasn't had... He was clearly slow to come to hand. He went to Maidan. I thought he'd run okay at Newmarket on Guineas weekend, and he still looked like he was, you know, he was backward and hadn't really come to himself. But that run at York was a big step in the right direction. He's had another 5 weeks to get himself back to form since then, and I think he will run really well. It may well be that he's drawn out of it, but hopefully not. But he comes from behind anyway, so I think he'll be, you know, if they move across, he'll just be moving himself into a bit of space behind horses, and I'm hopeful that he's able to get a decent run. And the other one who I might back if he drifts a little bit further is a horse with very little handicap form, but a horse with plenty of ability from a small yard, and that's Apollo One. Again, issue with him, he's drawn 22. Again, potentially the wrong side of the track, but we'll see how that pans out. And he is a 33-1 chance. Now, I think he'll go off maybe twice that price because of his profile. He was beaten in that same Newmarket race that the Summerhand ran in. But when he went handicapping first, the first time he ran in a big field handicap, having generally raced in group races and listed races through his career, he was only just beaten at Newmarket last season. And he's become well handicapped. It's easy enough to make excuses for his defeats. Came back to form when third, beating a length at Chelmsford last time out, off a mark of 98. He's off that same mark. And as I said, when he went handicapping last season, he was rated a fair bit higher. He now gets Benoit de la Sayette taking £5 off his back. And I think he's well handicapped. He needs the rub of the green, like a lot of sprinters. And that's that's the thing about races like this. You're relying on an awful lot of luck. You find horses who are capable of winning off their mark and in form, and just hope it goes your way. So those were my short list. I might tear that up completely and start going with horses drawn middle to low, or I might just decide to stick with them. But that's what I have at the moment. And I would say, see how racing pans out on Friday. If they're all diving to the far side and the low numbers are having the best of it, then you have to have a rethink. But if the high numbers are still competitive, then that's fine by me.
Okay, so Apollo One, currently 33s, might go off bigger, and the Ruby Warrior Brave, and also Summer Gahand or Summer Hand for Rory as well. So that's 2 25-1 shots and a 33-1 shot in the Wokingham, with how many places? 7 I'm seeing on the website. Oof. Okay, 6 and 7 place races back to back. Ichi Wazy double from the Platinum Jubilee into the Wokingham. Easy peasy, folks. 5:35 is the Golden Gates Handicap. It's one of the relatively new races, 1.25 miles. The trip missed the cut, would be an apt winner on US Open weekend at the 11-4 and well backed favourite for George Bowie and the Kiwi superstar James McDonald. What a booking that could be. 11-2 Falling Shadow for Buick and Appleby carries the red cap for Godolphin. 13-2 Aldous Huxley, also for Godolphin. Also for Godolphin is Honiton for Frankie and Jonathan Haley Gosling. And that's 13-2, and it's 10-1 and bigger the rest. Aidan and Ryan have got Sun King here, who's very disappointing. It would be rare enough to see a Belliestown Maiden win a Ruby, win a Royal Ascot Handicap, but that could happen with Sun King.
It could happen, and more luck to him if it does. I thought it was a tricky enough contest. Favourite is plenty short again. I went for one each way. PK at the biggest price, French Raider, Pervade. Colin Keane takes the ride on him. Drawn out and stalled 16, 20-1 each way. Don't know a whole lot about him, but I just thought he could be progressive, and he's hardly coming for the day out. That was the way I was looking at it.
Francis Graffar, who's got some big, big owners in his yard now, including the Aga Khan and this one, Judman. Okay, so Pervade is currently, as we speak, 20-1. Rory, your thoughts?
Not my favourite race of the week. Again, you know, I wouldn't be worried about backing something drawn wide here over the 1.25 miles. And we've seen one race on the round track, annoyingly, which I didn't manage to get involved in. I convinced somebody else. The handicap on the final race on Wednesday.
Not the Duke of Edinburgh. No,
it was a
something else.
It's one of the extra races, you know, the ones that don't belong at Royal Ascot.
It was the mile race.
Yes.
Hayley Turner was third. 16. It was 18, 19, 20. They were all right there in it.
For it was three of the five widest drawn, and they were massive prices, 40-1, 33-1, 20s. The trifecta paid £59,000. And I have a friend who's a very good puncher, and he said, I like Joseph O'Brien's horse is drawn one. It's a good draw. And I said, that's not a good draw. That's a terrible draw. You want to be drawn wide here. So on the back of that, he's had a 5p combination trifecta on the five widest drawn horses, and he's picked up $3,000 for his five.
Oh, what a hero.
But anyway, the point is, again, people will say you want to be drawn low here, but history shows that if you're raised wide, you get a decent chance. It did in the mile and a half handicap yesterday, where you can't be giving away, you can't be coming around the bend 15 horses wide, coming into the home straight, but you can certainly race wide before you get there and make up ground. So it wouldn't put me off backing something that's drawn wide. But in form terms, I thought the interesting horse was Honiton, who's won his novice last time out, or a maiden rather, at Sandown last time out, on good to firm ground, showing improved form. But his previous run is pretty good as well, because he was third in a novice at Newcastle, the Elder Eldroff. So I wouldn't worry about post impressions, not frank in the form. Elder Eldroff obviously won that pretty well. Honiton was beaten a short head for second, and is throwing up other winners as well. Lizzie Jean, he was seventh, was a good winner since, and Gordon's Jet in ninth also won. So the form is working out really well. And it's just a case of whether Frankie comes out with renewed confidence on Saturday, or whether his confidence is blown to pieces, because he is fundamentally a confidence jockey. And I don't think John Gosden did an awful lot to restore Frankie's confidence.
Or the owner, yeah.
Or the owner, yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how that develops, but that's a story for somewhere else. The key is Frankie's either absolutely determined to ride a winner, or he's down in the dumps. Hopefully the former. So Honiton's the one who makes appeal from a form point of view. But again, I'd say don't be ruling horses out.
I know we've talked a lot about the draw, which is kind of new for us. But Ruby, you did have a chat with Johnny Murta about the draw. I think it was before that. I think it might have been the Sandringham, or not the Sandringham, that's on the straight.
No, but yeah, it was that mile. Yeah. After listening to Rory and Frank as well, and to be fair. So I asked Johnny the question. I wasn't bullish enough to say, by the way, the two lads I listen to tell me you need to be on the other side of the track, but that's why I was asking the question. It was slightly loaded, but Johnny
I noticed it, because I knew where it came from in terms of this very podcast. But Johnny was keen. He was like, no, I'd still prefer it to be low. And actually, I think Hayley Turner was interviewed before she finished third, or like she was in the top three, wasn't she, in that race, Rory?
Rising Star won it with Neil Callan, and Safi Osborne was second on Rando Harvest, and Haley was third in a solo Rosa.
Right, we've covered the draw, I think, for sure. Let's move on to the final race at Royal Ascot. It's the 6:10. It's the Queen Alexandra. Now, unfortunately, Roman King has thrown us a bit of a wobbly here, because he still has Trushan in the race. He needs the thunderstorms to emerge, which I think those forecasts are getting less and less rainy, if at all. But as we record, Trushan is 6-5 favourites. This gets pulled out, which I think is probably more likely than not. Price is going to change significantly. Wordsworth is 2-1. He'd be a short price favourite without Trushan. 5-1 Falcon 8 for Dermot Weld and Tom Marcant. 10-1 Nate the Great. It's 10-1 Urban Artist. 12-1 a bigger dress. I go back to you. Sorry, I'm going to go straight to Ruby, because Stratham is currently 16s. And Ruby, he's got a great record right here.
He does have a great record, and he's in great form. He was been chasing, I'd say, a bit like Bring On The Night on Tuesday, when he gets below to the start, and William Buick heads to the stalls on him rather than the first fence. I'm sure he'd be quite happy with himself. He's just not getting any younger. He's 9 years of age, and it's probably a better race than it was last year, PK, when he won. So I think it'll be hard for him, and I would be very much with Wordsworth. I probably can't see Trushan running. He's going to be shorter, and I think definitely one up and trip would suit Wordsworth, who ran well behind O'Keefe the Sushi, who was placed here earlier in the week and raised you with the car on his last start. I think the extra mile would bring out a lot of improvement in Wordsworth, and I think he's hard to beat now.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what kind of price one assumes goes once Trushan is again assumedly pulled out. Roy, your thoughts on this?
I was thinking they're just going for Trushan to make it nice and simple. Yeah. But that's a little bit cheeky. We should mention Falcon 8 in there as well. Very impressive in the Chester Cup last season. Didn't have the best preparation for it this time around, but still ran very well, coming from well off the pace to be fifth. That form's worked out, obviously, with the runner-up winning the Ascot Stakes earlier in the week. So you'd have to respect his chances. Obviously, short enough in the betting, he'll be second favourite when Trushan comes out. But I'm going to throw up a big priced horse in here who cannot win the race. But there are plenty of scenarios where big outsiders have run into the frame in the Queen Alexandra, just because there aren't that many horses who stay the trip. And one horse who will stay, I'm convinced she will stay the trip, is Single. She's desperately, desperately one-paced. She struggles to win races because however they're run, she's always done for a bit of toe at the end of them. But all she does is plug on. Now, she was running off a mark of 79 last time and was beaten at Goodwood, so she's got no chance against the best horses in here. But as I said, if you go back through the results and look at the placed horses in this race, you get worse horses than her running into the frame. And I can see Single just plugging away and plugging away and finishing fourth or fifth, but hopefully third at, what is she, but 66 to 1, 80 to 1. You get bigger than that on the day. And there are different ways of playing a horse like that. You know, you can have the fancied horses to finish first and second and stick her in as a mixer in the trifecta, and you get a big return out of that. So I just think she will run a better race than her odds suggest. Hopefully she'll sneak into the frame. Or again, you'll be able to bet without the favourite as well on the day. So there are, you know, different ways of playing it. You know, if you can maximise your places with her, she will, touching wood, run a decent race for a lowly rated filly, and she might just get a share of the prize money.
Yeah, she's 66 to 1 in the main market. She's 50 to 1 without True Chance. It's probably going to be similar enough, assuming True Chance is pulled out and then Wordsworth goes to a similar price. So
I think when that happens, the outsiders don't tend to change price much at all.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
I think she'll end up the same sort of price. And as I said, I wouldn't be at all surprised if she gets bigger. So she's not one you have to rush in and take the early prices about.
Very interesting.
But, yeah, it's one of those days where a lot of races, I want to be having smallish bets and biggish prices.
And Single is definitely a big price, regardless what happens to True Chance. So that's currently 66 to 1. We'll see what she goes off. And Ruby with Wordsworth. Again, we assume that True Chance won't run. Gentlemen, that was a fantastic look and a great week. You can have a double. You don't need to have a single after that week of work. You can have and you're speaking of forecast and tricast mixers. Make sure the mixer is alcoholic. And I tell you, you'll have a cracking Friday night, folks. Thank you very much for your help and your winners over the course of the week. We'll be back next Friday. We're looking ahead to the Irish Derby Festival, in which Ruby Walsh, I'm sure you'll be live on RTÉ and or Racing TV for us at the weekend.
Bit of board, PK. Bit of board. Do you want naps for the weekend?
I do. Give me the nap on. Sorry. Yes, I do. Yes. Give me your naps. Go, Ruby.
I'm going to go Monada in the Jersey.
The Jersey Stakes. Monada for Ruby Walsh. Rory?
I think I will, and again, it's an each way nap, but I'll stick with Crypto Force in the Chesham.
Lovely.
Favourite making the market there.
So, well, your previous each way nap, which was Chief of Chiefs, got the fourth spot there at 16 to 1. So we got paid out there. Ruby, your nap yesterday, as we record on Friday morning, Mandrill Lagoon won. Rory, your nap, Saffron Beach won earlier on in the week in the Duke of Cambridge. Am I forgetting a nap that hasn't that, that's won? You've done really well, lads. Fair play to you.
Thank you very much.
How many have I backed? Go on.
All of them.
Definitely all of them. As I said, we'll be back next week for the Irish Derby Festival. We'll be live on Friday and looking forward to two cracking days at the Curragh, including the Irish Derby. And don't forget to check out, also, retweet, quote tweet this podcast live on Twitter and you'll be in the draw. Say something nice, put in hashtag FTHM and potentially get a couple of tickets for the Curragh where you can go to the Rockingham and all the other good races that are on that day. Great week. Thank you very much, gentlemen. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy Royal Ascot. Enjoy the weekend. Talk to you Friday.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18 plus, begambleaware.org.